Marin. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark. Man, you said you couldn't do it.
Nice to see you as always in the morning. Kalo, did you get the plumbing problem all fixed up? Because I didn't mean to interrupt you yesterday with some questions about my iPod, because I know you got a lot of things to do in the afternoon. You had the plumber over there. I'm sorry to bother you over there.
What's going on?
But nothing. I call you up. I got some issues with my iPod. I didn't realize.
And I answered your questions.
You answered your questions, but then I was still. I needed some more time. I needed some more time. There was a couple things I didn't know how to do. And you were like, dude, I gotta go. I got plumbing issues. And then you say to me that you can help me with my iPod, but you're not a psychiatrist. that's very nice. That's very nice.
You know. No. Come on. Let's be fair. You call me up. You ask me how to do some things. I help you out amazingly, you know.
Yes.
I you're like, oh my god, this is so easy.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. The doorbell rings. My plumber's there. I'm like, all right, I gotta go. Like, what am I supposed to do? Be on the phone and talk to the plumber at the same time?
Okay. Well, here I am with my new wisdom, my new knowledge of how to detach my iPod from the library and and separate them. But do I know how to remove songs from my library and put them on the iPod? I don't know quite how to do that yet. Do I know how to take songs off the iPod? No. So here I am with my new knowledge.
You didn't tell me that.
No, that's because I was about. Here's how it went. Yeah, Chris, I got it. Hey, I got to go. My plumber's here.
Okay.
No. Call back? No call back. It's all right. I know you're busy, and that when you're off the clock, clearly you're off the clock. Here I'm thinking the board op will help me. Do I call Riley? Huh? Do I call?
Well, you got better sense.
Well, but you don't have an iPod. You can't
exactly.
Help
you got better sense.
Do I call Pashman? No, because that could take all day if I call Pashman. All right. I figure Chris will cut to the chase, give me the information, but not leave me hanging because you got toilet problems.
Well, I actually said, I'll call you back, and then I thought,
we'll see him tomorrow.
Why would I do that? You know, I actually said I'll see you in the morning because you're the host of the morning show. And your wife's coming into town. Why am I gonna trouble this poor guy?
Sorry, buddy. I was just lonely, and I was waiting for my wife. Thanks for helping me out, though. That was really nice of you. It really was, and I appreciate it.
And call me anytime. My door's always open.
Except when the plumber comes.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, and I'm being selfish. I mean, plumbing's important.
No,
and
honestly, if the plumber wasn't there, I'd talk to you all day. I'm lonely as well.
Okay, that's great. That's great to know.
Two lonely guys in
New York.
I'll
take you up on that. Yeah. It's just sort of like the way it worked out last week where I talked to you for a little while, and after about 45 minutes, you're like, wow, this guy really is needy, and you hung up on me? Is that all day?
See, you just happened to call me at bad times.
Okay, so this is two bad times. I just want to start making note because not unlike my brother, where it's always a bad time after a few minutes, maybe I just make note. The first time was just because I can't remember. Oh, yeah, it was pasta. You're having a pasta problem. And yesterday it was plumbing.
It was boiling and I had to stir it.
All right, I did. No, I'm just making a little list. All right, so, Riley. Sorry, man. I didn't mean to.
No.
I know we got important things to do. Hey, so they have continued the countdown of the space shuttle. That's good. You know, it's interesting because it's got to be scary. You know, and they say that we're continuing the countdown. There's still a few glitches. They actually say there's still a few glitches, like there's some fuel gauges that aren't quite reading right because of a test they did. Let me tell you something. If I'm on that shuttle and they're like, all right, we're going to start the countdown back up. Don't worry about the dial on the right. I'm like, dudes, time out. Let's take another look at the gauges before we start this countdown. But apparently, this is good news because we need to get back up there. A lot of money goes into the space program. There's important research to be done. It's good. It's good for good old American confidence to get the thing back up. And it's kind of exciting when something blasts off into space, isn't it, Riley?
Well, it was in 1963 the first time I saw it.
Yeah, I know. But they're flying around now. I mean, it's getting closer.
Yeah, I know. They're going to be able to steer and everything. But I would see now. This is a manned flight.
Uh huh.
Jeez, I mean, how can they have the cover to something that's held together by a piece of tape?
Mm-hmm.
Tape?
Yeah. Is there tape?
That's what it says.
That's good,
it
man.
It says it was done by a piece of tape. They got bad weather down there. There's mm-hmm. a 60% chance that weather, no, 60% chance that it would take off despite the bad weather. And you got something wrong with it. I'd be kind of postponing till after Labor Day at this point.
Don't misunderstand. They got a lot of good new tapes these days. You know, Scotch is putting out a lot of tough stuff. You know,
yeah, it's not, 3M. Not just like I'll depend on them for my future.
Exactly. We're taking it into space. Hey, folks, don't panic. We're going to talk about the treasonous Karl Rove, the man who compromised national security plenty today. The RNC has released talking points to protect him, yet the White House spokesperson, Scott McClellan, still is not talking. What does that say to you? Are they trying to shift public opinion before they address the real legalities of the issue? This guy compromised national security. This guy, not unlike a terrorist, cares nothing about, you know, the well-being of this country, only about his position in power. And along a similar note, in response to the London attacks, you know, Mayor, it's interesting what goes on, because I'm a little scared. But before we get into that, what's the New York City, this I didn't even know this, New York City has agreed to pay as much as $30 million to thousands, Riley,
yes.
And you knew this, thousands of New Yorkers who were illegally strip searched after being busted on minor charges.
Minor charges, in some cases, female prisoners were subject to gynecological examinations.
Yes, they
in
were
in the name of security
and right in front of other people. Apparently, settlement notices are going out to 40,000 men and women who were forced to disrobe, get probed, and/or squat in front of fellow prisoners at Rikers Island and other jails from 1999 to 2002. 40,000.
40,000. And by the way, though, you did, women did have the option of not doing the gynecological exam. But when they decided not to do that, much in the case like when they won't let you, when someone won't let the cops look inside your car, they make life a living hell. They put them in a pen with no beds, with 70 other prisoners, some of them hardcore. So next time we ask you if you want a gynecological exam, you'll know how to answer.
I never heard the vagina compared to a car before, but I you know, I appreciate the analogy.
Well, I don't know. Okay.
But apparently, they have to drive the vagina pretty much all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A car you can get in and out of. But anyways, I digress, or I quibble, as you say. But Bloomberg also, and the NYPD up and ups, the brass at the NYPD have urged New Yorkers to please continue the daily routine. Don't be afraid of the subways. And in the same story, Riley, in the Daily Press, they quote a guy, the Daily Free Press was my college paper. The Daily News, they quote a security expert who says it's impossible to set up a foolproof system to prevent suicide bombings. They can only be minimized. Have a good day.
Yes.
Enjoy your train ride, okay?
I mean, look, this is a gigantic subway system here. It's in fact, a little larger than London's. They're right. It is virtually impossible. The way that you can deter any kind of attack on the subway system is by a visible, uniformed police presence.
Right.
That's how you deter things.
And hopefully, you know, I read about some new technology that apparently this, the technology coming out of Los Altos, California, it's keeping up. All of a sudden, we're at par with the movies, that they're creating new cameras that can literally identify somebody in a crowd, Riley,
yeah.
A crowd, and take that face, add that image, match it to either mugshot images or other computer images of suspects, and make an ID.
Find a terrorist in a crowd.
Yeah.
And see, in a city like this,
or
where you
suspect of any kind, you or me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking now, Mark, you know, when a train in New York empties out, there are 2,000 people on average in a subway train during the rush hour. Now, being able to zero in on any one of those faces, especially when they start melding into other faces that are trying to get on the train, people that are walking through a station, it gets to be some very tricky stuff. And we'll get into that as far as London's concerned.
Because it worked.
Yeah, apparently technology in London, all of those security cameras have at least led to the targeting of a certain group of people.
Yeah, PixLogic is the name of the technology that the CIA is investing in that does what I just said. But this, they had standard security cams in London where they actually saw the four bombers.
Yes.
And it helped in their identification, at least the three of them, which we'll get into momentarily. We're also going to get into Scott McClellan again, filibustering, stonewalling, not allowing any information out of the White House. Yet the RNC, the Republican National Committee, was able to distribute some talking points at the behest of who? The traitor! Karl Rove.
Karl who?
Yeah, Rove. You got it. The anti-American traitor, compromiser of national security. We're going to get into his, 15 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program with Mark and Mark.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition program here on Air America Radio. In just a few minutes, we'll tell you why it's looking more and more like Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove, the designer of George Bush, the architect of his existence politically, is guilty of treason, and why and how the White House is stonewalling and choosing to go ahead and lie to the public even more through surrogates with talking points to sway public opinion.
Yeah.
This is big stuff. This is like Watergate. Again, Karl Rove, Deputy Chief of Staff to the President, and the guy, the puppet master.
The right-hand guy.
Of President Bush. All right, so before we do that, let's get into some facts that are coming out of the bombing investigation in London. Authorities are saying it is highly likely that that one of the bombers, based on forensic evidence, died in one of the detonated explosions. Apparently, they've been looking at this. Some of these high-level anti-terrorism investigators have been looking at this as a series of suicide bombings, yet they're not saying that because they don't want to create too big of a panic, because this would be the first time that suicide bombers had, attacked Britain, and it would be the first time that British nationals, which they're assuming all these guys were second-generation Pakistani British nationals in their late teens to early 20s, that would be a homegrown suicide bomber, which is a very scary trend to start.
Well, it's a scary trend to start, and what we see, Mark, is Scotland Yard moving very, very quickly, and I must say with some degree of transparency, to let people know exactly where these investigations are. Now, what we know now is, as you very correctly point out, they have tied forensic evidence together to say that one of these bombers did die in the blast. They suspect that two others, and they have named three in all, but they say that they believe two others based on documents, not based on forensic evidence, but based on documents of these individuals that they found at the scene of the blast.
Apparently, all four sites had personal documents there.
Yes.
And the first identification of one of the bombers came about because the family actually
called in and said they were missing.
That he was missing. This guy is a young guy. His mother said that he became sort of fanatical with Islam when he was in his teens. He worked at the family business selling fish and chips.
Fish and chips, yeah. And I mean, it's a prominent, not prominent, but a well-to-do Pakistani family.
She had, but the weird thing is that they had no idea. They knew that the kid was a fanatic, but they had no idea what he was up to. And I think that is because if what they're suspecting is true, which is that they think that there were six suspects in designing this attack outside of the four
bombers. Yes, absolutely.
And they think that these guys could have come from Syria, they could have come from Afghanistan, or more frightening, they could have come from Iraq, where they were, which would prove, as we have said, that George Bush, and I'm going to politicize this, is that Iraq has become a training ground for terrorist organizations. So this means if there is a network, and if what they're saying is true, it's obviously spanning a lot of, if it's in Iraq, it wasn't there before the war, that's for sure. And the one thing that is frightening to me is that means that these guys who are training come in with explosives, recruiting, and they probably went to an imam and said, "Who do you got? Who are your most fanatical? Who are the guys that are ready to die for this?"
You know, I that's the thing that I get curious about, because these folks, the three individuals that they've identified and whose lives they've sketched out in British newspaper reports, don't seem to fit the typical. I mean, one has an 8-month-old baby, the oldest one, the 30-year-old guy, has an 8-month-old baby. The other, the middle guy, is like a sports fanatic. He was a big cricket fan and apparently a decent cricket player. These don't usually fit the notion of suicide bombers. Somebody doesn't just usually have a kid and then decide to go out and kill themselves.
Well, I don't know. I think that, you know, judging by the 9/11 attackers, I mean, some of those guys were well-educated. Some of them seemed to enjoy their life to a certain degree, and I think that this is the higher calling, and I think that the way these guys are mythologized within the community is making the ultimate sacrifice that on behalf of the guy's wife, there's probably that sort of like, you should be proud, you know, that your father made this ultimate sacrifice. It's a very sick, you know, when the Muslim religion is exploited in this way, it's a very dark bit of business.
Oh, yeah. And there are two questions that I have right off the top of this. Number one, is it possible that these young men were inadvertent suicide bombers? In other words, because they were not technically proficient, did they know when these things were actually scheduled to go off? Did they go off at a time when they weren't expecting them?
That's possible. I guess, you know, we'll have to wait to see, you know, what information continues to come out. It's an international effort to figure this out.
Yeah.
Authorities that have come together from, you know, like two dozen countries, you know, over the weekend to sort of go over evidence and talk about strategies in investigating these bombings. Only four of the dead victims have been identified and their names released. Forensic experts say it could take days or weeks to identify bodies because of the type of explosives that they were used. High-grade military explosives from where, we don't know. From where the planners came and the recruiters came, we don't know. Sales of bicycles have climbed since the bombings.
I can imagine, yeah.
And also, you know, which I can understand, you know, making that investment out of fear. What I can understand is that some international investors are kicking themselves because they didn't take the opportunity to capitalize on the death and mangling of innocent people in the bombing attacks in London last Friday. Did you know it was the busiest day on the London Stock Exchange in over 2 years?
That is incredible. But, you know, there's something, Mark, that we ought to look at here as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that you see, and it's the last sentence in this report that I have says, you know, because they went out and seized two cars up by Leeds because they thought there may have been suspicious materials in them. It says that one of these seizures was based on intelligence from Scotland Yard. Mm-hmm. Now, that's very significant. This was not from MI5. This wasn't a CIA federal intelligence. This was local police intelligence. Mm-hmm. Think about that and think about how 9/11 was investigated, not exactly the same way.
We're going to talk a little bit more about anti-Americanism, only this time with the deputy chief of staff in the White House, Bush's right-hand man, the traitor. Karl Rove is being protected by White House spokesman Scott McClellan, yet distributing talking points to give to you. Lies. 27 past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. In moments, we are going to be talking about Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove, the guy who is the puppet master behind Bush and the entire administration at this point, quiet as it's kept, as Riley has said, is guilty of treason. I believe he is. Much of America believes he is. The Republicans are trying to spin it differently. That is, the Republican National Committee, though the White House is stonewalling, not making any statements out of fear that that they will see the man behind the curtain for who he is, a traitor. Am I right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Where's Dick Cheney been? I heard a rumor like a week or so ago he was in the hospital. Is he dead? Would we know?
Having his batteries recharged.
Who the hell knows? Where is he? I'm curious about that. Would the American public know if the vice president was sick? If he even died, how long would it take for this administration to cop to that? They lie about everything else. They hide everything else. They displace blame. You know, if he did die, they'd blame the liberals.
He's the subject of an ongoing investigation. They can't comment.
Yeah, I bet. So, you know, thank God we got this iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator to help us understand what the mainstream media is saying, because I don't know if I would if I didn't have it. So let's feed it some headlines. Yeah, if you want to hear Brendan McDonald, Brendan P.W. McDonald, do that live. Come to Florent, Restaurant Florent on Ganzevoort Street in the Meatpacking District of New York City this Friday, 6 to 9, live. We're going to have Steve Earle is going to be playing songs live. How do you like that? That's worth coming down for.
Yeah.
Aside from Mark and I. Plus, we'll be giving away free coffee and tons of other free stuff. That's a Restaurant Florent on Ganzevoort Street in the Meatpacking District. This is from 6 to 9. That place has been around forever.
Yeah, and we got a bona fide mayoral candidate, I believe, who will be joining us that day as well, Fernando Ferrer.
Is he?
Who I went to college
with. Is he coming?
Yeah, I believe he's supposed to be coming.
All right, so let's feed this thing some headlines. Here we go. From Bloomberg News, senators say talks with Bush on Supreme Court go well. Senators say talks with Bush on Supreme Court go well. Translation, Bush says talk with senators go good. From the Associated Press, reprimand of Guantanamo chief urged nixed. Reprimand of Guantanamo chief urged nixed. Translation, brass privately award Gitmo chief black and blue star. There you go. From the Chicago Tribune, Michael Jackson sued over Beatles library. Michael Jackson sued over Beatles library. Translation, baby, you're no longer a rich man. Let's do another one. Jackson to creditors. We can work it out.
Uh-oh. Hey. It's a record.
Rubber soul paid for with rubber check. Oh, boy. How fun was that?
Yay.
All right, let's get into this thing. Now, I've been saying this for a week. Now, as you know, and maybe some of you don't, Karl Rove did leak the name of an undercover CIA operative, Valerie Plame. He leaked it, maybe not in the language that you would want him to leak it, but he did it on purpose. He said, I believe she works for the CIA, Joe Wilson's wife. He did it on purpose. He did it with malicious intent. He did it to punish Joe Wilson. He did it to show anyone else who wanted to speak out against this administration, in public or private, that there would be held to pay in terms of their reputation and their personal safety. And by doing this, he compromised the safety of the United States because revealing the name of the identity of an undercover CIA operative who was working in the weapons of mass destruction area internationally is heinous treason. And now the White House, who knew about it as well, who promoted this guy to deputy chief of staff, you know, knowing that he did this, they probably rewarded him. They probably thought they were going to get away with something. But the White House has not made a statement other than we can't talk about it until the grand jury is done, which is crap. You know, they're just trying to stall. They're waiting for the Supreme Court nominee to take away from this, draw focus away from this. But they did find the time, and this is Karl Rove's work himself. They did find the time to let the Republican National Committee release a series of talking points. For all you dumb conservatives out there who listen to us to get some sort of hate buzz or to condescend in your dumb little narrow minds, those people that you respect so much, like O'Reilly, like Hannity, like anyone on Fox News, they don't even create their own copy, my friends. They are distributed talking points. They are surrogates. They are pawns of the administration. They are propaganda outlet for the Republican administration, who is too afraid to make a comment from within the White House right now. So they're using these guys with specific talking points to try and sway public opinions with crap. And we have a copy of these talking points. Of course, the first one, once again, comma, you got to have the once again. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's very important to have the sort of condescending, smug, dismissing attitude, like you know things, but you really don't, in order to make your point effective to people that don't know things, but think they do. Once again, Democrats are engaging in blatant political attacks. Yes. You know why? Because this is not only a political issue, it's a national security issue. It's an issue of the disingenuous, lying administration that we have in place. It needs to be a political act. It needs to be politics. Something needs to change. A couple of senators are getting on board with this. A few congressmen. They need to hold this guy, to take this guy to task. It needs to be political now.
You know, when you look at these talking points, the amazing thing was I didn't even know they existed, Mark. Last night I happened to be watching one of the gab shows on one of the cable networks, and sure enough, some Republican ghoul starts talking about the fact that Joe Wilson, Ambassador Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame's husband, the guy who went to Niger and found out that that whole story about selling yellow cake to Saddam was nonsense, that Joe Wilson advised and donated money to John Kerry's campaign for president. And the host of the show said, well, wait a minute. What has that got to do with Karl Rove and what he said?
Yeah.
Well, this is a partisan attack. It was wholly within the purview of these very talking points. He was spewing them out virtually, word for word.
And the truth of the matter is that Democrats are engaging in blatant political attacks. It's necessary to get to the truth. And we're talking about a person, Karl Rove, the deputy chief of staff of the White House, the man who designed Bush's political personality, used personal attacks and put the national security of the United States at risk and used the political cover of the administration to make personal attacks that compromise the integrity of the security of the United States for political reasons. What's worse, really? What's worse, making political attacks on somebody who should be taken to task for their evil, demonic lack of respect for political institutions and this country? Or somebody that uses politics, uses the cover of a political administration to make personal attacks at the risk of national security. I think, was that confusing? What I was saying is, Rove.
He's a traitor!
Rove's an ass.
But you know what? You hit on something a little earlier, Mark, that should not just go over our listeners' heads. Dick Cheney has not been seen or heard from much lately. Yet Dick Cheney now, according to all of this documentation that Rove and his people are trying to come up with, was the person that they were trying to vindicate by outing Valerie Plame. In other words, Dick Cheney did not authorize Joe Wilson to go over to Niger. That was their central point here. That was supposedly what Rove was talking to Matt Cooper about in the first place. Now, we do know that during this generally same time period, Dick Cheney was making trips over to Langley, over to the CIA. And there was widespread speculation that he was over there trying to mold up the intelligence to run up to the war to Iraq.
See, the whole issue, Riley, it seems to me, it doesn't matter why Joe Wilson went or who told him to go, who authorized anything. The truth is that what he brought back was information that proved to be true, that there was no indication that this yellow cake stuff was in transit or even being requested. It doesn't matter where it came from. The truth of the matter is, it doesn't matter what the language is. Karl Rove is a traitor for revealing Valerie Plame's identity as a CIA operative, and all the other stuff makes no difference.
But see, this is the other stuff that the Republicans are throwing out here into the mix in an effort to try and cover Rove's behind. Yeah. They're trying to say, well, there was some credible evidence that there was a deal between Saddam and Niger. The fact is, the documents that were used to try and make that case were forgeries. They were obvious forgeries. Some of the people that signed those documents hadn't been in the government of Niger for over a decade.
Absolutely. So when we come back, we're going to hear what the White House has to say in an evolution of avoidance and lies.
Yeah.
43 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Morning Sedition.
Let's just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to counterterrorism analyst Larry Johnson. He's a regular guest on our show to discuss a little more about the London bombing, a little bit more about some of the opinion out there in the ether that London is too laxed in monitoring and dealing with the Muslims who live there, and that we talked to him a little bit about whether it's worth compromising civil liberties, for security. We've not talked to him about that specifically before. Is Karl Rove a traitor? Is he a traitor? Yes. He outed a CIA, undercover CIA operative. I don't care what the language is. I don't care, what anybody thinks in terms of parsing language or equations of semantics. He did what he did on purpose, and because of that, he compromised national security. Is he a traitor? I don't know. I asked Senator Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey yesterday on this show. Let's hear what he had to say.
I'm ready to go to war to make sure that Karl Rove, who loves
trying to identify people as scoundrels and calling them names and suggesting that liberals coddle terrorists while they get after them. And here this man had the audacity to look for others to blame, get people punished, and he's the guy who tells all.
He compromised national security. He's guilty of treason on some level, isn't he?
I certainly believe so.
That's Frank Glattenberg, mm-hmm. Senator Frank Glattenberg of New Jersey on our show yesterday. Look, you know, the definition of treason is the betrayal of one's country by consciously and purposely acting to aid its enemies. And I think that applies. Now, what did the White House have to say about this? Well, in September of 2003, the discussion was already on the table as to who leaked Plame's identity because, you know, Joe Wilson, understandably, pissed off, you know, and there's a momentum within Washington to find out who leaked it. So this is what McClellan said in September of 2003. That's Scott McClellan, White House spokesperson.
I don't know of anybody in my administration who leaked classified information. If somebody did leak classified information, I'd like to know it, and we'll take the appropriate action.
Well, that was obviously not Scott McClellan. That was George Bush in September of 2003, you know, talking to reporters one day after Scott McClellan, White House spokesman, made this statement.
The president has set high standards, the highest of standards, for people in his administration. He's made it very clear to people in his administration that he expects them to adhere to the highest standards of conduct. If anyone in this administration was involved in it, they would no longer be in this administration.
So they're going to fire him. That's what they said. They're going to fire whoever had the, you know, whoever said this is on the record. This is the president and this is the White House spokesperson saying this stuff in September of 2003. What are they saying yesterday? Let's listen to Scott McClellan, White House spokesman, yesterday.
Difficulty that you have said to the public, dating back to 2003, affirmatively, Karl Rove was not involved. And now we have evidence to the contrary. So how do you reconcile those two things? How does the president reconcile those two facts?
Again, if I were to get into discussing this, I would be getting into discussing an investigation that continues and could be prejudging the outcome of the investigation. I'm not going to do that from this podium.
You say you won't discuss it, but the Republican National Committee and others working obviously on behalf of the White House, they put out this Wilson Rove research and talking points distributed to Republican surrogates, which include things like Karl Rove discouraged a reporter from writing a false story. And then other Republican surrogates are getting information such as Cooper, the Time reporter, called Rove on the pretense of discussing welfare reform. Bill Kristol on Fox News, a friendly news channel to you, said that the conversation lasted for 2 minutes, and it was just at the end that Rove discussed this. So someone is providing this information. Are you behind the scenes directing a response to this story?
You can talk to the RNC about what they put out. I'll let them speak to that.
Oh, okay.
I understand your question.
And other Republican surrogates saying that the conversation lasted for 2 minutes and that the subject was ostensibly welfare reform. They're getting that information.
Who cares what the subject was?
And again, you're asking questions that are related to news reports about an ongoing continuing investigation. And you've had my response on that.
That was Scott McClellan yesterday being grilled by reporters. Finally, reporters seeing a hole, taking advantage of it. The fact that they're not, giving any answers makes them, you know, curious. If they can't deny it, obviously something is horrendously wrong in the White House. And these talking points, who cares? Who cares what the conversation was supposed to be about? All this stuff is a big smokescreen. It's their big attempt to not deny, not confirm, create chaos, mixed messages. The bottom line is he did what he did. He revealed the name of Valerie Plame in whatever semantic equation you want to look at it, whatever the conversation was about, whatever. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
But see, these talking points, Mark, are distributed for a reason. They are distributed because a lot of the people that will hear them on these cable gas bag shows won't have any other source of information, and those talking points will resonate if they hear it from enough surrogates. If they listen to one show on one channel at 7 and another show on another channel at 9 and they hear the same thing, it's like an advertisement.
Fox is a friendly network.
Friendly network.
Well, the thing is, Riley, it's like, sure, they can listen to all these monkeys who have no point of view of their own other than the one that's given to them. Just all you do is just sort of drop talking points into the angry head of whatever blasting moron is you know, spewing propaganda for the right, and people will just listen to it. Why don't they ask the question, well, what does the president say? because he says nothing. And that should indicate something to people, no matter how stupid you are. So let's listen to McClellan again in the same press conference from yesterday. This is White House spokesman Scott McClellan saying nothing.
At the very least, though, Scott, could you say whether or not you stand by your statement of September 29th, 2003, that is simply not true that Karl Rove disclosed the identity of a CIA operative?
John.
Can you stand by that statement?
John, I look forward to talking about
this.
Yeah,
never deny, never confirm.
It's an appropriate time to talk about those questions while the investigation is continuing.
You take that as a yes or a no?
Can you
explain
why?
This was a statement you made on the record 21 months ago. You very confidently asserted to us and to the American people that Rove told you he had nothing to do with it. Can you stand by that statement now?
Yes, and I responded to these questions yesterday.
He apologized to you for telling you he is not involved.
Hi, Helen.
Sounds like Helen Thomas, yeah.
I'm not going to get into any private discussions.
He put you on the spot. He put your credibility on the line.
And Helen, I appreciate you all wanting to move forward and find the facts relating to this investigation. I want to know all the facts relating to the investigation. I do want to talk about this.
Scott.
I do want to talk about this, and we will talk about it once the investigation is complete.
He does
want
to talk about this?
You regret what you said.
When is that going to be, the investigation?
You have your option. I'll try to come back to you if I can, but I think I've responded to
this. Well, you haven't responded to that. Do you think you went too far 2 years ago?
Go ahead.
Scott McClellan, White House spokesman, did not answer that last question. Got to love Helen Thomas for infantilizing him. It's like, Scott, little man, little
hey,
boy,
kid.
Come on, little boy. Don't carry such a heavy burden. Did not comment. Said they're going to wait till the investigation. This is the White House. All of a sudden, they're respecting the law? This is the Bush White House, for God's sakes.
But you know what? Helen Thomas may have hit on something. I would imagine Scott McClellan right about now doesn't want to have Karl Rove over for dinner because he's ending up being on the grill over this guy. And all he can say is the same stonewalling foolishness. And he knows each and every time he goes before the White House press corps, he's going to get the same questions over and over and over again. Thanks, Carl.
They're all disposable. I mean, clearly, you know, national security is disposable, so why wouldn't he be? They're all disposable. He doesn't. Do you think they care about Scott McClellan? Really? There's a million.
But just, Rove isn't disposable.
That's right, and that's what this
Rove
is all
forever.
About. That's what it's all about, Riley. So look, that's the press actually doing their job for once, because there aren't two sides to this, because the White House isn't talking. They're distributing talking points to the Republican through the Republican National Committee that are probably designed by Rove to obfuscate, to create chaos, to displace blame. But the truth of the matter is, there is definitely problems. Larry Johnson is going to come on in just a few minutes to talk to us about London's terrorist issue in terms of the Muslim population there and how it could impact the world in terms of terrorist attacks.
Yep, and we got a whole bunch more coming up for you later this morning, so stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
You're listening to Air America Radio. Good morning. I hope you're having a pretty good day out there in New York City, even though it's a little scary, Riley. It's a little scary getting on the subway, I got to admit to you. And Mayor Bloomberg and the New York Police Department brass urge New Yorkers to continue their daily routine. And in the same daily news story, Two sentences in, they got a quote by the security expert saying it's impossible to set up foolproof system to prevent suicide bombings. They can only be minimized. It's like, you could have left that out, you know? You could have just said, hey, have a good day, and, you know, just stay alert.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they're saying, have a good day, take the bus. What are New Yorkers supposed to do?
Ride a bike, take a walk. Oh, of course, get on the train. It's going to be fine. And we're going to talk to Larry Johnson, a counterterrorism expert, and he's on our show a lot. We're going to discuss just what this means, what it means. If it is true, if these were suicide bombings in London, which they are not saying they are, there is proof that, forensic proof that one of the bombers did die at the site. They're a little hesitant to say that they were all suicide bombers, because that would mean that they were homegrown, in-house suicide bombers, which has never happened in England.
Yes.
And what this means to the world, we'll talk to Larry Johnson about that. In Iraq, although Iraqi Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari warned against setting a timetable for foreign troops to leave, quote, at a time when we are not ready, end quote, at a press conference with U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Robert Zoellick, he said, this is al-Jafari, Ibrahim, the prime minister, the Iraqi prime minister said, security forces in many of Iraq's 18 provinces, primarily the Shiite South and the Kurdish-controlled North, has improved to the point that the Iraqi forces could take control there. He said, quote, we can begin with the process of withdrawing multinational forces from these cities to the outside of the city as a first step that encourages setting a timetable for the withdrawal process, end quote. Now, the Department of Defense wants to pull troops out of Iraq next year because the commitment is stretching the Army and the Marine Corps dangerously thin, and as we all know, casualties are mounting and things really aren't under control there.
No, and they're trying to make all the pieces fit. That story that we talked about the other day, where the British are talking about cutting their numbers of troops in the same region of Iraq, is why you're hearing Jafari say this now.
And a little later in the show, we'll talk about an in-house Army study by the Rand Corps Arroyo Center, the Army's own federally funded research institute, talking about just what it means to have a stretched military. I want to add right before we say hello to our guests that the ban not allowing 8,500 Air Force troops in Britain was lifted. They are now allowed to go into London. They weren't as of yesterday, but because we said something, they lifted the ban.
Yeah, maybe it
wasn't just us. Tourist officials, politicians, and British MPs were also criticizing the decision. There's been a bunch of developments in the investigation of last week's terror attacks in London. Our next guest is going to help us understand what it all means. Counterterrorism analyst Larry Johnson served with the CIA from 1985 through 1989. He worked in the State Department's Office of Counterterrorism from 1989 through 1993. He joins us now. Welcome back, Larry. It's good to have you again.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
Okay, so let's say that it seems like the evidence, or what they're leaning towards, is that these were suicide bombers, and that means it's the first ever on British soil, and also the first ever who they actually they are British national. They were born in Britain, these kids, second generation Pakistanis. Now, this is a whole new level of terrorism tactics in the West. What does it mean for us? What does it mean for the world?
This is reminiscent a little bit of the attack in Morocco 2 years ago, in which an Al-Qaeda operative showed up, went into a relatively poor neighborhood, but recruited some folks who were, let's call them Islamic adherents, who were willing to go the extra mile, equipped them with bombs, sent them off, and they hit five targets within about the same period of time. And so I think as they proceed with this investigation, they're going to find that there was an outsider of some sort that came in, most likely, and provided the technical expertise with developing the bombs and equipping these guys and helping them plan the operation.
Well, they say there's six. They're saying that they're suspecting that there were six people that either came in from Afghanistan or Syria or Iraq. And what do they do, Larry? Do they go to a local imam or an imam they have a relationship with and ask, which guys are ready to do this?
Really, it's more through family and friends network.
Hmm.
I don't mean to sound like a telephone commercial, but.
Uh-huh.
The reality is, and Mark Sageman, who's a friend of mine, a former CIA officer and a psychiatrist, who's done the only empirical study on this, has established that the recruitment goes through, people you know where they stand theologically, where they are in their personal lives, and you're able to reach out to them, and that makes it a pretty dangerous network from that standpoint. It's not like it's going to be necessarily easy to penetrate.
Right.
Larry Johnson, the outsider that you talked about a minute ago, the person that maybe gave these people the expertise to do what they did, assuming they're the ones, do you think that that outsider or a group of outsiders is still in England?
Probably not. These guys, they're willing to have other people carry out the suicide attacks, but they themselves are big on survival, and so they will help set the attack in motion and then move on and it probably escaped. You know, I would hope they're still there because it gives them a chance to catch him if they are, and can interrogate them. But you know, this does not require an enormous amount of logistical support, but it does require people that have got some expertise with building bombs, because you know that's not the kind of thing you can read on the internet and then go do. If you do, you're going to, you know, wind up with the next nickname of, you know, Lefty or
sure, right. Sure. Now my partner here was speculating that, you know, maybe, you know, these guys were set up. Any chance that these guys were put on the trains with bombs and not know it, that they were going to be suicide bombers?
Possible, but not likely. You know, because these guys were old enough and educated enough, I think, as they'll discover that, you know, nobody's going to give them a bag and just say, here, you know, take this to such and such location without wondering what's in it.
Mm.
So, no, I think they knew what they were doing. You know, we just need to recognize that within some, you know, there are some people within the radical Islamic community, and I want to emphasize that that's a fairly small community, that, you know, they will believe that they are truly carrying out something that's going to find them favor with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't represent the vast majority of Muslims, but unfortunately there is a very small segment who will respond to that kind of call.
Larry, there are a lot of people here in the States who are looking at Great Britain's openness in terms of allowing people in and out of the country with relative ease and say that that needs to be changed. One of the things they say is that people from Arab countries or Muslims ought to have some sort of visa, and Britons of Muslim descent ought to have visas to come to the States. Do you agree with that?
It's something we ought to look at. Because the reality is we like to focus on the poorer countries, the Hondurans and the Mexicans, and, you know, look at them and say, you know, keep your terrorists away. But the reality is the folks that have attacked us have come out of Germany and England.
But, I mean, would you target Muslims? Would you target people from Arab countries? How would you decide?
I don't think you can target Muslims, per se, because, again, in this case, you know, it's like we're not going to start a situation here in the United States where we tag everybody by their religion.
Mm-hmm.
So you go by nationality. In this case, these folks are Brits.
So all Brits then would have to have that, they would have to have visas then.
Yeah, if we move down that road, that would require that. And then same thing for the United States citizens going to England or to Europe. So,
yeah, they tried that with the Brazilians. The Brazilian government didn't really respond too well to it.
Yeah, they said, okay, we'll play your game. And we find, you know, the physical damage of the terrorism is candidly fairly minimal, but the economic damage and the damage that comes from changing how people live and the impositions on the personal freedom, that becomes pretty onerous. And from what I've seen of the Al-Qaeda statements, that appears to really be their ultimate goal, to affect the economy, to provide a long-term damage as opposed to just a short-term blow. I mean, sure, they get the benefit, the payoff of setting a bomb off in a subway, but they're more interested looking long-term of trying to really hurt the economy of the West.
Okay, so quickly, if that's the truth, their ultimate goal is what, a jihadi world, a jihadist world, an extreme Muslim world?
Yeah, first and foremost, driving the West out of the Middle East and reestablishing the rule, Sharia law, the rule of Islam,
right,
and that, you know, they will be free to pursue their religion.
Larry Johnson, always great to talk to you. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks, Larry.
You take care.
Bye.
It's 16 past the hour. When we come back, we're going to have the Cliff Notes. We're going to have the War on Brains. And
uh-oh,
Planet Bush, we got from yesterday. You know, Lawton's in Iraq, and we want to replay that because we're supposed to hear from him today. So you're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. It's 16 past the hour.
Join the Morning's Edition
right now.
Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
20 past the hour, 21 past the hour, actually. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We'll have the War on Brains in just a couple of minutes. Right now, Lawton Smalls from Planet Bush, a bureau chief, is in Iraq with the Truth Tour, a group of right-wing radio personalities who were there reporting on the truth. He went over there with him, and this is a conversation we had with him yesterday from Iraq. As you know, Morning Sedition has a staffer who lives in the strange right-wing world of our president. And this week, he will be doing a series of special reports from Iraq. And now on the phone, here's Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls live from the Green Zone in Baghdad. Good morning, Lawton. So how are you making out? Is it hot enough for you?
115 degrees. Doesn't bother me a bit. Folks are already calling me Lawton of Arabia.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a natural desert dweller, Mark, part Bedouin. The sun does my bidding.
So what, are you in an air-conditioned room, aren't you?
What's your point? I'm a foreign correspondent on assignment for one day, and already you're trying to spin this thing.
All right. Listen up. Okay, Mr. Foreign Correspondent, what have you been doing in Iraq?
As you know, Mark, I'm here on the Truth Tour. Uh-huh. Me and a bunch of us right-wing radio talk show hosts are here to report the truth about America's glorious progress in Iraq with all the negative sour grapes from you liberal media surrender monkeys.
All right. The Truth Tour. Now, come on, Lawton. Did you know this whole thing was organized by a right-wing public relations firm who works on conservative political campaigns, my friend?
Well, we are out in public. I mean, that's a no-brainer. You get an expert.
No. What I'm saying is this is a totally phony trip, micromanaged by the military and designed to prop up Bush's horrible poll numbers. Come on.
This is
worse than propaganda. This is like a Hollywood junket for Spider-Man or something.
Oh, no.
I'll bet you haven't even left your room yet, have you?
Well, if you want to split hairs about it, no. But this is a fact-finding mission, Mark.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you, the reporting up to now has been a complete disconnect with what I'm seeing with my own eyes here
in
Iraq.
All right, your own eyes, guy.
Taking it.
All right, okay, so what about unemployment? I hear it's at like 27% there. That's like incredible. What did you find out about it, truth teller?
All the Iraqis around the compound here seem busy enough.
Yeah.
They've been getting us stuff, serving us dinner, cleaning up. No unemployment problem here. You got to cut through so much left-wing bias to even talk to you.
Okay, my friend, Mr. Foreign Correspondent.
Thank
Iraqi
you.
Medical officials say lack of clean water and sewage and the resulting waterborne illnesses continue to be a big problem in many parts of the country. What have your keen powers of observation revealed to you since being in country there, Lawton?
I will confess, I have had explosive diarrhea ever since I got over here, but I'm sure I got that in New York. I mean, the water here is just fine. I've been drinking it all the time. It's kind of gritty. It's got some texture, but I like it.
Just curious there, Edward R. Murrow, how much Arabic do you speak?
Well, I had to learn the word for toilet right away. You know, and they're beautiful toilets, the nicest marble I've ever seen. President George W. two-terms mandate Bush has clearly turned this place around toilet-wise.
Wait, buddy, you're not going to do any real reporting. You know that, right?
Well, if by reporting, you mean we're not going to be like those creepy hotel journalists from the mainstream media slinking around in hotel bars, drinking and cribbing other writers' notes and clips so they don't have to go out and cover the real war. We're going to get out there and report. I promise you that. Nose to nose with the Iraqis. Boots on the ground. Fair and balanced.
All right, dude. Look.
Boots on the ground.
Hey, look, Lawton, you know what Al Franken said.
Well.
And you remember he's been over to Iraq to perform for the troops, so he knows his stuff.
Oh, yes, Mark. I keep a little red book of his quotations with me at all times.
He said.
Special man.
He said, if they think that the military is going to let something happen to them while they're over there, come on. That's how stupid these people are. They think they can walk around and talk to shopkeepers. They don't realize how dangerous it is over there. What was that?
Fireworks, Mark. The Army PR fellas told us the locals are so happy now that President George W. two-terms mandate Bush has liberated them, they shoot off fireworks all the time.
Dude, Lawton, those aren't fireworks. Oh, man. Lawton, are you okay, Lawton? Lawton.
Mark?
Yeah?
I've been under the bed for 2 days. When I'm not on the toilet. Fireworks my ass. This place is a hellhole. Nothing worse. Explosions all the time. The soldiers all have that worried look on their face. I thought New York was bad. That was nothing. This does not look like we are winning, Mark.
Oh, man.
This doesn't look... And the other radio people hate me. They say, I'm in my way. You're stupid. Get out. And it's so hot.
Oh, no. I'm sorry,
freaking
buddy.
Hot. Kill and get me, Mark, please. I'd like to go home now.
I don't think please. So. I don't think you can, buddy.
Please.
Just try to take it easy, all right? Try please. To keep your head down, all right? Think about something else. Just take some deep breaths. That'll help.
Can I think about choking?
Yeah, yeah. Whatever works, buddy. Whatever works. This is sad. I can't even figure out what song that is. I'm actually worried about it. You all right? You okay, buddy?
You know, journalism's easy, Mark. You just got to have integrity and ask the right questions.
All right.
Honesty.
Okay. Yeah, sure. All right. Goodbye, Lawton. Stay safe in Iraq, all right?
Well, thank you for that, Mark. I'll call you tomorrow with some more good news. God loves you. Deal with it.
Yeah, that was Lawton Smalls, our Planet Bush correspondent. He's in Iraq. That was from yesterday. He's to call us today at some point. Hopefully we'll be hearing from him and see how the truth tour is going. We've got one of the Milfingtons coming up.
One of the I'm not sure which one it is, but it's the War on Brains.
The War on Brains. I think that's Mort Milfington. And for those of you who don't listen to our show regularly, we have a family of cousins and brothers who do a series of different pieces on here. And this, of course, is the one about the Bush's war against science.
Science.
And also we're going to be talking more about the traitor Karl Rove and the White House's inability to comment because of fear, spin, whatever you want to call it. Karl Rove is a traitor, and we'll get into that coming up next. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. It's 27 past the hour.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 34 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program with Mark and Mark.
Hey.
I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
It is?
Yeah, I swear to God it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, folks, if you're just tuning in, here are some highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. All right, here we go. A study by the U.S. Army says that the Army is stretched too thin by fighting simultaneous wars. The Army is so desperate for troops that the Boy Scouts have changed their rules. In order to graduate from Boy Scout to Eagle Scout, now you have to do one tour of duty. A spokesman for the Army said he will deny there is a manpower problem as soon as he gets the time. The CIA is investing in new technology instantly recognizes terrorists in the crowd. The manufacturers of the device said this has nothing to do with racial profiling. The machine is incapable of making those kind of decisions, but once we fix that bug, it will be perfect. Some skeptical experts say terrorists can easily beat the high-tech recognition system with another high-tech device, the Mach 3 Razor. An edition for the Weekly Reader children's publication was caught trying to solicit sex from a 14-year-old boy on the Internet. A spokesman for the Weekly Reader said they would immediately suspend Mr. Neff's popular Hide the Sausage game page.
Ooh.
Is that wrong? Yeah, of course it is. You know, but that's the way it is. That's why it's funny. Right, Kalo? Come on, man.
That's right.
Oh, man, I'm drifting. I feel like I got hit in the head last night or something. It's the humidity. Humidity, Riley. Humidity.
85%.
Sucks it out of me, my friend. So let's talk about this. Karl Rove, the traitor who compromised Valerie Plame's its undercover CIA identity and now is using the Republican National Committee to distribute talking points in his defense. The amazing thing about this, Riley, is that the White House is stonewalling, not making a statement, yet clearly Karl Rove sent out these talking points. And you had this weird moment where you were watching something on the news and said, that's out there. What is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, there was this discussion like they usually have, a liberal and a conservative and somebody moderating. And the Republican person, who was some kind of consultant, they're all consultants to somebody.
Yeah.
And they start up with, well, you know, Joe Wilson endorsed John Kerry for president back in 2003.
Out of nowhere.
Well, not out of nowhere. Here it is. Wilson tied to 2004 Kerry campaign for president. Wilson endorsed Kerry in October 2003. That's the talking point.
Isn't that interesting if you're listening to this and you didn't know this, that these people that these other people respect, if you're a conservative and you listen to Hannity or Rush or any of these guys or O'Reilly or these spokespeople or these experts or what have
you. Gasbags.
These gasbags, they all get distributed the same talking points. Now, these are probably written by Karl Rove. The first one in relation to the Joe Wilson, the Valerie Plame thing, is that clearly they're trying to direct public opinion away from the truth, which is Karl Rove. That doesn't matter what semantic equation you think he did it in or whether you think he didn't do it. He put national security at stake by compromising the identity of an undercover CIA operative who was working in the weapons of mass destruction area for personal vindiction. It was a political assault on Joe Wilson for going against the neocon death cult in his revelation that the Nigerian yellow cake did not exist.
Yeah, and what you saw here, Mark, was the fact that the administration was caught, I can't use the street term for it. Mm-hmm. I guess I could. Ass out. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
What happened was they had latched on to this Niger yellow cake story as being one of the building blocks for the run up to the war, and they were just not prepared for somebody to say, you know what, this is nonsense.
Right.
And all of these Republican talking points put together cannot say, they try and hint around that there was some reason for people to believe this nonsense, but Joe Wilson knew better, and this was pure and simple political retaliation.
But the real thing is that's so annoying because these talking points that are distributed. Where are the Democratic talking points? How about some of those? Why doesn't someone get on that over at the Democratic National Committee
next week?
And it's interesting that because we have to speculate on our own. We all have to put our heads together and actually develop opinions based on facts as opposed to these just angry talking heads, these narrow-minded morons on the right who just drop these things in their head along with the condescending disposition. The first talking point on this list is once again, Democrats are engaging in blatant political attacks. Yes, because politics have been compromised, along with national security, by the deputy chief of staff in the White House, the guy who designed George Bush, is guilty of treason. The White House is afraid to say anything because they don't know what to say yet, so they're trying to get their surrogates to lie, as usual, in order to spin the public's opinion of what's happening.
And little by little, they are eroding the safety and security of all of us by this.
Every week, we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., room 124 of the Dirksen Senate Office Building. Named after the late Republican Senator Everett Dirksen, Vietnam War expansionist, promoter of the Constitutional Amendment for Organized School Prayer, and best remembered for the quip, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money. Yesterday, in this hallowed structure of democracy, where last year a bipartisan committee of congressmen held a party to crown the Reverend Sung Yung Moon Messiah, a hearing was held by a similar group of intellectuals, hell-bent on deciding just how painfully we're all going to die of cancer. Enter one Arlen Specter, author of the single bullet theory and largely responsible for much of Oliver Stone's irritating career. He headed the hearing to gain support for a bill to lift our war president's habitudinous restrictions on stem cell research. Now, don't get me wrong. Specter has to be a man of great insight on the potential benefits of stem cell research, having himself suffered immensely from a disease that is usually fatal, being a Democrat trapped in a Republican's body.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But research on embryonic stem cells faces stiff opposition, Mark.
Yes.
From the likes of Bill Frist and millions of Southern Baptists who believe throwing away toenail clippings is equal to abortion. These great thinkers insist the government should only support the unproven practice of using alternative sources of stem cells that do not destroy what they call budding human life.
Hmm.
Hey, my sperm is budding human life. You don't see me calling it sacred and trying to make a person out of it. Even if I could find a woman who would cooperate, I still wouldn't call it human life. I'm not saying it's not valuable. I mean, why do you think I have all those mason jars?
Oh.
By the way, girls, the months of January through June of this year are still available. Call this number in the next 2 days and get the whole month of July free. Eight. According to the ill-informed, or as I like to call them, everyone in charge, the only way God will approve of stem cell research is if the cells are taken from so-called alternative sources. And even then, it's imperative that they be baptized and trained to kill Muslims.
Oh,
those are the conditions. But what are these alternative sources? A recently leaked presidential memo labeled Dumb Things I Believe lists the three main sources as endangered Alaskan grizzly bears,
yeah,
Canadian babies, and, of course, retarded death row inmates. Now, aside from the fact that most of these sources aren't even human, it's completely unrealistic to think Texas would ever give up the joy of executing retarded people just to help find a cure for cancer.
Oh, no.
Which, of course, brings us back to the year 1971 and Richard Nixon's great pledge to destroy the Big C. Little did we know he was talking about Cambodia.
Yeah.
Turns out that was his only promise that he ever kept. And unfortunately, it looks like the only promise our current president is going to keep is the one he made to Jesus years ago, to make the world pay for his painful sobriety.
Yes.
Remember, friends, those jars are half off. And that's today's dispatch from
the War on Brains.
Oh, well, how do you like that, Mort? You got through that whole thing. That was great.
Yeah, it was hard getting through it, you know.
It was great. You're a very smart fellow.
What are you getting at?
I'm not getting anything.
What is that? Was that some sort of remark?
No, I'm just trying to... I'm complimenting
it's
you.
It's a dig.
No, it's
a dig.
It's in earnest. It's in earnest,
earnest.
Mort. I'm saying that I enjoyed your work, and that was a fine piece today on the War on Brains.
Well, thank you very much.
Even with the strange digression with the semen in the jars, it was fine. It was smart.
By the way, I hope you enjoy that enchilada sauce.
You thank your significant other for making me a big jar of
what are you looking at, Riley?
Nothing.
All right.
Now, where's my enchilada sauce? No love for the black man? What's up?
What
the hell's going on here?
Any,
I thought your bit
still
sucked. How about that?
I'm still trying to fit in.
You got any music to play over this, Chris?
Don't play the music. We want more awkward silence.
Okay. But
Bushy in silence to you.
Certainly not a problem with you, is it, Jim? Exactly.
Yeah.
That was a genius. That was a beautiful moment of awkward silence.
Thank you.
What do you got going today after the show? You going to go do something?
Well, I got to do some more writing.
Uh-huh.
You know, writing.
Yeah, I do.
You go home and have your enchiladas and call your girlfriend, your wife, whatever you call her.
She's my wife, and she's in town. I'm very happy to see her. She just came in last night, so we'll enjoy the enchilada sauce that you gave me.
Yeah.
A lot of people think we don't really get along. You know, they think that for some reason that this game we play on the radio is somehow real. And I just tell them that that you got to be crazy. You and I are like best of friends, aren't we, Jim?
Yeah, we're like this.
All right. See, I'll go.
Gee, this is television.
I'm sorry that you're bitter and you resent me. I mean, that's not it's not my problem that I don't do things the way you want me to do them, Jim.
I love you. You make me strong.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. So look, we're gonna try and get. I think we got Lawton Smalls calling from Iraq.
Uh-oh.
So stay here for that. It's 45 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now how's that gonna look in a deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Now to clear my name.
Next message.
Morning Sedition. Fighting treason. With reason. This is Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi!
As you know, our right-wing Planet Bush bureau chief, Lawton Smalls, is over in Iraq right now on the so-called truth tour, and we've got him on the phone, so let's see what's going on with him. What's going on in Iraq there, Lawton?
Well, Mark, my right-wing radio truth tour colleague sent me out of the compound on a reporting mission to talk to some real Iraqis, do some hardcore boots-on-the-ground reportage. That's how much they respect my journalistic skills, Mark.
Hey, Lawton, what's the matter with you? You don't sound so good. Where are you? Are you all right?
Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mark, I don't know where I am. Back at the Green Zone in Baghdad, one of my colleagues put me in a Jeep, and I heard him say to the driver, take this guy somewhere where we can't hear him anymore. So he dropped me off out here in the desert and drove off.
Oh, no, man. Would you drive those right-wing radio goons nuts and they kicked you off of the, kicked you out of the compound or what?
No, Mark. They took a vote and said, who's the one man we would want out there gathering information? And every one of them said, Lawton Smalls, send him out there. He deserves it.
Lawton, what did you do? You sang for him, didn't you?
It's funny, Mark. Not everyone wants to hear the score to South Pacific sung to them for three straight days.
Yeah, who would have thought?
It's weird.
Yeah. So how hot is it, Lawton?
117 degrees. Of course, I'm used to it. I'm part Bedouin. They call me Lawton of Arabia.
What was that?
Nothing. Just some fireworks, Mark. We're winning this thing. They're celebrating.
Dude, you sound like you're in trouble, man. You need to flag down a car or something. Get back to the Green Zone. You're freaking me out, buddy.
Hey, don't worry, Mark. I'm a foreign correspondent. I can adapt to any environment. Still, I wish somebody there'd be a 7-Eleven around here pretty soon, because I could really use a big gulp right about now. I'm not a camel.
Oh, man, Lawton, get out of there. Please. Please.
Truth tour.
What?
Stupid.
Oh.
Mission accomplished.
Oh, no, he's like he's going to hallucinations.
Axis of evil.
There's something wrong with him.
Good morning, philosopher kings and queens.
That's my line.
Progressive utopias with no sense of humor.
Oh, man.
Deal with it.
There's something really wrong with him.
We gotta, I'm going to wash that man right out of my hand.
Oh, no.
I'm going to wash that man.
Someone's got to. I wish,
right out of my
wish there's something I could do here.
I'm sorry, Daddy. I didn't mean to break your Nazi bone china.
Who are you talking to, man?
Your bone china, Nazi.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
I think he's really in trouble, Riley.
Let me pour you another bourbon, Daddy.
Lawton.
You can hit me if you
Lawton.
Want.
Lawton. 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 I hear a car. Can you flag down that car and get a ride, Lawton? Snap out of it for a minute and flag down that car, couldn't you?
Hi, fellas. I'm Lawton Smalls. I'm here on a truth tour. Can you give me a lift back to my house, please? I'm very thirsty. Can I have a big gulp? Hey, wait a minute. Why are you putting a bag over my head? It's hot out here. Don't. Oh, no.
Lawton. Lawton. Buddy, you there? Where are you? Oh, man, something happened. Oh my God! He must have dropped his phone. Now I'm concerned, man.
I'm starting to get nervous.
That's scary stuff. We're gonna have to get back in touch with him. Hopefully in the next 24 hours, see what's going on with Lawton Smalls. That's wow. All right. Well, folks, let's shift gears a little bit. We'll be broadcasting live this Friday from Restaurant Florent on Gansevoort Street in the Meatpacking District of New York City. Steve Earle will be there to jam. How's that? He's going to play some songs for us. Plus, we'll be giving away free coffee, free stuff. They got great food at that place, too.
I keep hearing that.
Yeah, it's very good. I remember going there a couple times. It's like open like all night, I think. And you can just, it was one of those.
Yeah, it's 24 hours a day.
Back in the day, man.
In the trendy, hot, formerly S&M bar district.
If you needed a little something to eat, you know what I mean? It's actually getting harder and harder to find places to eat in the middle of the night in this place, you know, in New York. You'd think it would. Now, according to, we talked about this last week a little bit, the Whitehall memo. That was a leaked document written by British Defense Secretary for Tony Blair. It states basically in that they're planning on removing some troops from Iraq, and also it quotes, I quote it, emerging U.S. plans assume 14 out of 18 provinces could be handed over to Iraqi control by early 2006, allowing a reduction in Allied troops from 176,000 down to 66,000. There is, however, a debate between the Pentagon and CENTCOM, who favor a relatively bold reduction in force numbers, and the multinational force in Iraq, whose approach is more cautious. Basically, it's saying that it's leaking to some degree that there is interest on behalf of the American, of this administration, obviously, to pull troops out, but there's also a plan to do so.
Yeah, there's a plan to do so, and it has a political, and we should emphasize this, a blatant political motive, and that is to ensure that the Congress remains Republican. Yeah. That's at the root of this American plan, which, by the way, we wouldn't have known about had not a British document gotten leaked.
Well, I say that finally this administration is listening to those of us who've been saying that they should pull out a long time ago, and to a lot of the Democrats who've been saying that all along. And also, you know, it coincides right with this new Army study conducted by the Rand Corps Arroyo Center, the Army's own federally funded research institute, that says the report is called Stretch Thin, Army Forces for Sustained Operation, states that the challenges for the Army are profound. It concludes that the service is so strained that the U.S. will soon, quote, need to decide what the military capabilities the Army should have and what risks it should assume, unquote. The study calls into question the Pentagon's ability to carry out its policy of maintaining the capacity to fight these two wars at the same time. It states that the strain on the Army is so great that combat units are spending one of every 2 years deployed on overseas battleships instead of one of every 3 years, as called for by deployment guidelines.
You know, one of the things, Mark, that they don't say in all this thing about which provinces in Iraq the Iraqis actually control, they are talking about some of those provinces, of course, are Kurdish, under Kurdish control. The Americans leave Iraq and leave the Kurds to police themselves. You know what the first thing they do is? They de-Arabize the city of Kirkuk, which has been a big issue. That could descend this whole country into civil war.
It's already starting, according to some people. Yeah. I smell a draft coming. Hey, look, folks, if you were strip searched in the last few years, you got some money coming to you. I'll tell you about that coming up next. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Hope you're having a decent Wednesday here in New York City. It's a little humid for me. It's making me a little kooky. Feel like pressurized. Feel like I'm in a pressure cooker. The humidity, even if you have the air conditioner on, I can feel the weight on me.
Uh-oh.
And also weather conditions down there where are they taking that thing off? In NASA, Cape Canaveral, is that where it is? Or is
Cape
it in Texas?
Canaveral,
is that where the the shuttle's launching from? I was just watching it in the other room. Apparently the shuttle, they slowed down, they stopped the countdown because they were suffering from a couple of glitches here and there. I don't know about you, man, but if I were a shuttle astronaut, and they said, hey, just hang out a minute. We're fixing a gauge. It's like, dude, well, I'll hang out for a week. Get me out of this suit. Let me get some rest. Make sure this thing is up to snuff, will you? You were telling me earlier, Riley, they had some tape on there?
Yeah, apparently they had some tape on this. This is, of course, the Shuttle Discovery. And a NASA administrator says, quote, as far as safety is concerned, we have done everything that we know to do.
Uh-huh.
Gee, that's reassuring.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know what they know to do?
And they're down Florida, right?
You know, I'm trying to figure this. Usually they do shoot from Florida, and they end up back in, California?
Yeah, I don't know. It's been a while. I think it's important that they get this thing up into space. I think it's important to do this kind of research, because we're going to have to leave this planet eventually, Riley.
Where are we going?
I don't know, but I want to be on board. Would you go to space, man? Would you?
Huh?
You think you would go to space if you had the opportunity?
If I looked at that Columbia footage again, I wouldn't.
No, I know that, but I mean in general, like, because I was thinking about it. Like, if they said it's perfectly safe, we're going to take you up into space, and we're going to put you in a suit, and we're going to walk, you can walk around on the moon, would you do it? I don't know if I'd do it. It'd freak me out.
The suit thing might be a little
Would it freak you out, Kalo?
No, I go in a heartbeat.
You would?
Yes.
Yeah, and but... Just to experience it?
Well, it's zero gravity. It's going to be a blast.
It'd be kind of fun to fly around, huh?
And you know, for nothing, if you're going to die, that's the way you should die.
Yeah,
okay?
All right.
In a space shuttle somewhere.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Or maybe just float off into space.
Oh, yeah.
Float off into space.
That would be awesome, too.
How scary is that? I remember that. I can't remember what movie that is where you just... Oh, it was in 2001 where you see one of the guys just goes...
That's
about five movies they did that.
They just float off into space.
Yeah, now it is going. It is from Florida.
Of course it is.
Well,
I don't know why. I don't know why we would think differently. Well, I'm just having a brain skid, my friend. My brain is compressed. It's compressed by humidity. This city, dig this, New York City has agreed to pay as much as $30 million to thousands of New Yorkers who were illegally strip searched after being busted on minor charges. I had no idea. Settlement notices are going out to like 40,000 folks, men and women, who are forced to disrobe, get probed, and or squat in front of fellow prisoners at Rikers Island and other jails from 1999 to 2002. I had no idea. Is this something that goes on frequently in this city?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that I had no idea might have described Michael Bloomberg, our mayor's response to this, because it didn't actually happen. Most of it didn't happen on his watch. He didn't become mayor until 2002. So from 99 to 01 is on Rudy Giuliani's watch. But what has happened over the last few years, Mark, very quietly, is that the city has paid out increasingly large numbers of damage awards to people who have been in some way brutalized, violated, strip searched, or whatever by the police.
They deserve it.
Well, yeah, you know, you have situations, and there have been a number of these.
To be reimbursed, that is.
Yeah, well, where somebody's walking across Washington Square Park. There was a situation where a college professor, black college professor, walking across Washington Square Park, got caught up in a marijuana sweep that they do occasionally down in that area, and the guy ended up in jail. No one would believe that he was just on his way to a class.
Unbelievable.
They ended up having to pay him.
And that ruins your reputation, certainly if it gets in the paper and your professional situation, that an accident like that could destroy somebody's career and reputation. Even if they are, you know, paid back or reimbursed.
Yeah.
Did I mention we'll be broadcasting live this Friday from Restaurant Florent on Gansfort Street in the Meatpacking District of New York City? Steve Earle will be coming down and performing with us. We'll be giving away free coffee. I heard a rumor that that your buddy's going to be down there. The mayor, Fernando Ferrer, will be there.
President mayoral candidate. Yeah.
Do also want to say that Karl Rove is a traitor. If it's not clear to some of you, Karl Rove, the deputy chief of staff, the man who designed George Bush's personality and is the puppet master in the White House, guilty of treason, as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't matter what the semantic equation is that he leaked the identity of CIA undercover agent Valerie Plame. He did it. The White House is saying nothing. They're trying to seal the weird non-reality that they contain over there, yet the NRC, the National Republican Committee, has sent out talking points that I believe were authored by Rove himself to fill the heads of the little sort of, you know, hate robots on Fox News, on the radio. It's interesting. You think these people have opinions of their own, but no, they don't. They're delivered in dispatches. I'm having them right here in my hand, the Wilson Rove Research and Talking Points. And the first one, it's interesting that apparently a lot of these radio show hosts and TV personalities don't even have the, you know, the skill to decide what tone they can use, because they add the tone right into this one. It just says, once again, comma, Democrats are engaging in blatant political attacks. The condescending sort of smug distancing is actually written in for them. A lot of them, I guess, don't have that. They just have this sort of weird kind of growling anger, and they just get fueled by these talking points. And again, I'll respond to that talking point. It is a blatant political attack. It needs to be a blatant political attack. The deputy chief of staff in the White House, you know, so, you know, compromised national security for political reasons. That deserves a political attack.
Well, yeah, and McClellan, incredibly, is trying to tell the White House press corps, and by inference the American people, that there's no relationship between the White House and the Republican National Committee. None. Even though Ken Mellman comes out of the White House even though Ken Melman now runs the RNC. Scott McClellan, in the bit we played earlier, so when asked the question about whether the White House knew what the RNC was doing with the talking, oh, no, we have nothing to do with that.
Yeah, the White House spokesman, Scott McClellan, says that he had no idea what the Republican National Committee was doing. What are you kidding me?
What
these
a
guys,
weasel.
They can't not lie. Even when they're not saying anything, they're lying. It's unbelievable. Authorities are saying it's highly likely that at least one of the bombers died in the detonated explosions on the tube last Thursday in London. They're assuming that this was a series of suicide attacks, so they're not saying that directly because it would be the first time that that's happened where British citizens, you know, became homegrown suicide bombers. Very frightening possibility. A suspect has been arrested, apparently the relative of one of the bombers. Three identities of the bombers are known. These were guys in their late teens, early 20s, all of them second-generation Pakistani British citizens.
Yeah, British citizens. And what scares, I think, the British about this is that there have been Britons involved in suicide bombings outside of Britain. There was a British guy who was involved in Israel, Richard Reid, the shoe bomber. Was busted on a flight from London to New York. But the bottom line here, Mark, the thing that I think makes people very, very nervous is that these folks were not particularly known to intelligence. The British police found out about these guys because a member of their family called in and said they were missing right after the blast.
So apparently not only did the police not know what they were up to, but neither did his mother.
Yeah.
She did say that he was a religious fanatic and became one in his mid-teens, and now they're speculating that there's probably upwards of, there's probably six people that were involved in the planning of this terrorist attack. That's besides, outside of the four that actually took the action, that blowing themselves up or blowing up the trains, whatever they find out what happens. And they assume that some of these people, these planners, came from either Syria, Afghanistan, or Iraq, which would lend some validity to the claim that it wasn't a terrorist state before, but now it certainly is aligned with some of the worst terrorist factions, and it is producing terrorism since Bush made the decision to invade Iraq. How are the subways in New York? Living here, I'm a little nervous. What is going on with security on the subways? We'll get into that a little bit when we come back. It's 15 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Mornings Edition with Mark and Mark.
MorningsEdition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningsEdition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Wow. I feel like I got bonked in the head. I found out something about myself in that last segment. I say you know more when I get a little tired. That's what I found out.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what I found out.
Wait a minute, you had your caffeine, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm having more caffeine. But then, when you're really tired and you have caffeine, sometimes it just makes it worse. It makes you more incapable. It's like you're amped up tired. It's like, wow, I've just amped up my tiredness.
Yeah.
In just a second, I'll be telling you about the New York City subways. It's just interesting. Bloomberg said, just keep doing what you're doing, keep
go ahead, hop the train.
Stop saying, get on the train and have your day.
Yeah.
And then they quoted a security official or a guy, security expert, saying, hey, there's no way to stop suicide bombing. Sorry,
no chance.
It's not going to happen. Maybe we can minimize it. But, hey, have a good day. Keep your eyes open.
Hey, Baron.
Yeah.
Future Mark's on the line, so better be careful.
Cool. Future Mark. That guy's great. Put him through. Hey, buddy, what's up?
What's up?
So, Future Mark, what's going on in 2050?
I'm in Iraq.
Why are you in Iraq?
Well, it's kind of a state now.
You're kidding. You mean we're still there? We never pulled out?
Well, we couldn't really, We really screwed this place up. The whole region, Iraq, Iran, Syria, they're all states now, buddy.
Wow.
Only they're called Arkansas, Irandiana, and Mississippi.
Weird, man.
Puerto Rico, Cuba, North Korea, they're all states, too.
Wait, they were our enemies. The Iraqi insurgency was so strong. I mean, how did it all, turn around?
Can you hear that?
Is that Mr. Softy?
Yep, Mr. Softy. Turns out the way to beat the Iraqis was to start feeding them our food. We airlifted in like 300 Mr. Softy trucks, introduced cheese to the culture, and boom, Chubbopotamia, my friend.
Wait, you mean they got fat?
And lazy. They stopped praying, they stopped making car bombs. Now all they do is just chase these trucks around. But it's so sad because they can barely run.
Wow, so we just took over.
Well, their fat troops got fatter than our fat troops, and we kind of, you know, won by default. 6 months later, fat Iranians, state. 6 months after that, Syria, state. They started calling it the wide around the Middle East.
Oh, okay, all right. Hey, I thought you said they stopped praying. Isn't that a call to prayer loudspeaker right here back there?
Nope, that's a call to biscuits and gravy, my friend.
Biscuits and gravy? Oh, man, that's heavy stuff.
Biscuits and gravy brought down North Korea in 2 weeks, dude. Those people were starving. The Pentagon doesn't even bother with military contracts anymore. Now all their deals are with Bob Evans and Jimmy Dean, who are national heroes, by the way.
So wait a minute. Why are you there?
Well, it's a good question. I'm on a humanitarian mission here. I'm handing out Prilosec and blood thinners, and I'm teaching a low-impact aerobics class.
Aerobics?
Yeah.
But isn't the point keeping them fat and docile?
Oh, yeah. It's low impact. Low impact is the key, buddy. And afterwards, they get to have pancakes. It's just a way of keeping them in shape enough to keep the oil fields up and running.
Wow, we're still after the oil, huh?
Yeah.
Is that what this is all about?
No. These are cooking oil fields, buddy. We found huge deposits here, and we need it for all the fryolators in Iraq alone. You should see the people pack away the fried clams, and they didn't even eat shellfish before.
What's that?
Oh, that's the nacho cheese tanker.
Oh, so they like nachos too, huh?
No, just the cheese, actually. People waddle out with their buckets and they just fill them up.
Oh, that's gross. Sounds like kind of a sad existence.
Ah, well, it's no worse than, say, you know, Indiana in your time.
Yeah, I guess. Hey, okay, well, you know, have a good time. You got anything you want to tell me before I hang up?
Yes, I do, actually. The 6th Harry Potter book comes out on Saturday, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Book in chapter 8, all right, about 5 pages in.
Uh-huh.
See if you can build one of those. There's a ton of money in that.
Really?
You'll thank me, man.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Later.
Ooh. So there you go. Just buckets of cheese, Riley.
We have no affiliate in Indiana.
I don't know. Yeah. You know what I mean? I know we have a lot of affiliates. I used to know more about where they are and what time we were on. Yeah. But I just want to say hi to all of them. And I don't know if we have one in Indiana. We'll be broadcasting live this Friday from Restaurant Florent on Gansford Street here in the Meatpacking District of New York City. Steve Earle is going to come down and play a couple of songs. Fernando Ferrar, mayoral candidate, is going to come down and chat with us. We're going to be giving away coffee and stuff. It's a nice little restaurant. It's going to be a good hang.
Oh, yeah, 24/7 this place. We'll be, you know, hopefully not walking over drunks from the night before.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. That'll make it kind of interesting if they're not loud. Do you remember when we went up to Boston? One woman's like, "Hey, Jimmy!" Jimmy Tingle was on, and she was like, "That's Jimmy!"
Yeah.
I love
she
that
was looped.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So, look, what is Lance Armstrong, a machine or what? I'm not even, you know, I am not a big sports fan, obviously, and I've never even watched the full Tour de France, but, dude, He's what? Is he going to win this a 7th time? Is he going to do it?
He's like the Ray Charles of bicycles or something. I mean, how does he accomplish this? He conquered cancer, and then he's winning like this?
Seven times. He's in the 7th. He just finished first in the first phase of the Alpine phase. I wish I knew more about it, but I am marveling at the guy's physical. What do you call it? Prowess?
Is what you're talking about.
Are you a fan of this, Caleb? The bike thing? Do you jump on board with that? Does that excite you in any way?
No, I watch it on SportsCenter. You know, they have the little updates.
Yeah, but that's it. You don't go crazy. Some people fly over there for it.
Who actually watches it, though?
I don't know.
I watched a little bit of it.
Yeah, but you don't watch the whole thing. Like, you know.
Well,
you
watch the whole thing. You got to commit a month or something.
Robin Williams is a big fan. Robin Williams actually will go over there. The reason I bring him up is the last guy I talked to about this was Robin Williams. He showed up at the Comedy Cellar after he'd just gone to France. He's a fanatic for it. Loves the stuff.
How is he? Nice guy?
Yeah, he's a nice guy. You know, he's a nice guy. Always been nice to me. I've only run into him a couple of times. He left a message on my answering machine once, which was really funny, because he had interest in producing Jerusalem Syndrome a couple of years ago, and I had no idea they were going to produce it in San Francisco, he and his wife. He had mentioned it to me, and like 6 months later, I just get this message on my answering machine. She's like, "Oh, hello, it's Robin. Call me back." And I don't know his number. I don't know nothing. That was the last I talked to him. They're just like, hello, it's Robin. And that was it.
Did you ever come up with a screenplay for Jerusalem Syndrome? For a major motion picture?
No.
That should be, that's one of the things that you might be able to do.
I just did an interview with a rabbi who's writing a book on called Gonzo Judaism. He wanted to ask me about Jerusalem Syndrome. And, maybe I'll do it again sometime.
Who would
in
you want
future.
To play you?
Who would I want to play me?
Yeah.
Can I play myself? I'm doing those, bad haircuts. They put a wig on me for me as in seventh grade. Some bell bottoms.
Oh, that'll work.
Yeah, I want to do it that way. We got a filmmaker coming up who's made a film called The Oil Factor. It's going to be playing in New York. It's all about why the war in Afghanistan and Iraq was all about oil. We're going to be talking to him. I saw the film. It's very compelling. A lot of good information. His name is Gerard Ungerman. He'll be with us coming up. So stay with us. 27 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Fighting terrorism is clearly not the reason for such a large deployment of troops, as clandestine terrorist cells are better fought by undercover agents and special forces. Is it a coincidence if massive U.S. military positioning happens to take place in Central Asia, the Persian Gulf, and other oil-rich regions of the world? Is fighting terrorism the real motive? Or is Washington more interested in grabbing whatever oil reserves are left, fueling terrorism and war as a result?
It's 34 past the hour. That was Ed Asner narrating a film that I saw the other day. I'm Mark Maron, by the way. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. The film is The Oil Factor, Behind the War on Terror. The Bush administration insists that we're in Iraq to sow democracy. Our guest begs to differ. He made the film. It's going to run for a week at the Anthology of Film Archives in New York beginning this Friday. Filmmaker Gerard Ungerman joins us on the phone this morning from Los Angeles. Good morning, Gerard. I found your movie documentary to be very compelling. Why don't you explain to our audience how the war on terror affected by the fact that most of the world's oil is in the Middle East?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Yes, you can see this as a coincidence, or you can see this as not a coincidence. But it's a fact that right now we have about 500,000 U.S. troops deployed around the world, either near oil fields or oil routes, and in particular, the fact is that today almost three quarters of what's left of the world's oil is located in the Middle East and Central Asia.
So you're talking now that not only in Iraq, but there's a military, American military deployment and British military deployment in a lot of Central Asia. And in your film, you make a point and you show it through maps that if you look at these military installations, they're pretty much surrounding the oil resources of Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, and a couple other places.
Well, absolutely. And, there's nothing like looking at a map and seeing the positioning of countries in the area to really understand the significance of in particular, U.S. military deployment in Central Asia. In Central Asia, you're right, basically, in the middle between Russia to the north, China to the southeast, India to the south, Pakistan. And we are talking about these huge new economic markets which are exploding and, whose need for oil are also, humongous. And these countries, don't have the oil they need. Russia used to be self-sufficient at the time of the Soviet Union in particular, and also to a great deal because of the oil and natural gas of Central Asia, which is Azerbaijan, Kyrgyzstan, mm-hmm. Uzbekistan, Tajikistan. Today, what we see is that American troops are deployed in many of these countries that used to be occupied by the Soviet Union, and that's in particular Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan.
Right.
And we have had, recently some extremely important development that we at least, you know, talk in the film in terms of when you look, for instance, at the fact that there was this project of building a pipeline in the 90s
through Afghanistan.
Yes, exactly. That yeah. You know, from the north, from probably Uzbekistan or Tajikistan, would go through Afghanistan, through Pakistan to the Indian Ocean. This was an idea that first came to Unocal and an Argentinian company called Bridas.
Right. So the Unocal was part of the designers of this pipeline. That information has been around for a while. The speculation that we actually went into Afghanistan to secure that pipeline, and it's very interesting. You know, now I tell you, some of the footage in the film of the Taliban, when the Taliban took over, some of your historical footage I had never seen before, and I found it to be incredibly mind-blowing. I had no idea how violent, how chaotic, and how primitive the Taliban was.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, this is a striking thing. When you travel through Afghanistan, you know, compared to Iraq, you see an extremely poor, desolate, and primitive country. And, you know, there was a lot of also of talk of helping the Afghan people from, you know, the part of this administration. And after 3 years, 4 years now almost, you know, nothing has been done.
Mm-hmm. Gerard Ungerman, is the U.S. government, in your opinion, willing to overlook human rights abuses in some of these Central Asian countries in the name of maintaining access to oil?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt at all. I mean, there's some stories, of course, which are public and very well known about, you know, abuses. In Cuba on the Navy base. There's talks of abuses, of course, in Abu Ghraib in Iraq. But there's even more sinister stories which are not so public. The fact that the, you know, in particular the CIA is using some you know supposedly private airplanes to take some prisoners to countries.
Right, renditioning, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, to some countries in Central Asia, to giving them basically to some dictatorship to be tortured there, just because, you know, we don't use techniques here, such as, you know, breaking bones or pulling nails or pulling teeth.
Sure.
Stuff. But these guys, you know, don't shy away from this technique.
Well, let's get back to the film in the sense that, like, it seems to me that the crux of your argument in the film is that these troops are protecting oil resources, but there's the issue of Russia and China and the United States coming to head over the oil resources of Central Asia. Now, are you familiar with the Chinese bid to buy Unocal?
Oh, absolutely, and that's something, you know, I was sort of trying to refer to this, you know, a little bit earlier. You know, there has been some recent development that definitely go a long way in the direction of proving, you know, that there's this contention, especially between Washington and Beijing for control of Central Asian oil and natural gas. Like you just mentioned, you know, there's a bid from China to try to buy, you know, Unocal, that did all the prep work for this pipeline across Afghanistan, which, by the way, I must say that, you know, the U.S. has abandoned. You know, now they are trying to do this pipeline going west, going towards, you know, Turkey, and already half of this new pipeline from Azerbaijan to Turkey has been opened about a month ago, and now there remains the other half, you know, running from probably Turkmenistan towards Azerbaijan, which means going either under the Caspian Sea or by land, and by land that's through Iran. And you see also, for instance, that, you know, the Chinese are already building an oil terminal in Pakistan.
Yeah.
There was a story not long ago because there was an attack, a terrorist attack on this facility being built, and a few Chinese engineers, you know, were actually killed. Also, for now a year, China has sent some engineers and diplomats to Kyrgyzstan,
right,
to try to basically to sell themselves as, you know, for their technology to drill and pipe, you know, the oil.
Yeah.
And there's been some riots, and now there's a new president in Kyrgyzstan who made a speech yesterday where he said, you know, well, you know, now we don't want the Americans anymore, you know.
That's in Kyrgyzstan, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, Gerard Ungerman, there are a lot of people in the United States who, when people, by the way, who opposed the invasion of Iraq, who, when folks say, well, it was about the oil, they argue that couldn't be it. That's not really why the U.S. went. Your film interviewed some of the neoconservatives from the Project for a New American Century. Is that where you came to the conclusion that it really was about oil?
Well, you know, also, there's two things. On the one hand, you know, you get testimonies, and also you look at the map, you look at the logics of things. There are many people here who says, you know, for instance, and I'm sure it's partly true to a degree, that, you know, because there's such a tight link between the neoconservatives in this country and the hardline Likud people in Israel, that also there's the idea of removing a regime hostile to Israel. But, you know, I'm sure it may have, you know, played a vague part in the decision. But when you look at the condition of deterioration of the military in Iraq after 30 years of embargo, clearly, you know, the level of threat that Saddam Hussein, you know, could pose to any country in the area, and to Israel in particular, a very modern, advanced, you know, country in the area, which has, you know, nuclear weapons on top of it,
yeah,
the level of threat of Israel, of Saddam Hussein to Israel, you know, was almost nil.
Okay, well, the film is The Oil Factor, Behind the War on Terror. It is playing at all week at the Anthology of Film Anthology Film Archives in New York. That's beginning this Friday. Gerard Ungerman, thank you. I enjoyed the film.
Thank you so very much, Mark, for having me.
Today. You bet. You
Thanks.
Take care. Have a good day. I'll tell you, some of the footage in that film of the Taliban, as I said, I found incredibly impactful. It really has nothing to do with the thesis of the film, and he's pretty—he executes it pretty well. You know, it's not—you know—it's not a polished film, but in terms of its presentation, but the argument and the way he maps it out in the interviews he does, he makes a pretty good argument for the consolidation of oil resources and also the threat of Iraq, funneling much of its petrodollar through beginning to fund it through the euro, which could have thrown off the economic balance of the planet in relation to the dollar. Those arguments have been around for a while, but I think Ungerman does a pretty good job at executing them. But I'll tell you, just for the footage of the Taliban, it's worth seeing.
I'll tell you what, this whole idea of China and the United States having to compete for a finite amount of resource in terms of fossil fuels is going to be scary to our grandchildren.
Yeah, very scary. It's 45 past the hour. We're going to come back. We're going to do our Cliff Notes. We're going to talk a little bit, some closing comments. We'll talk about where we're going to be performing this Friday over at the restaurant Florent on Gansford Street. So stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Feels good to be a gangster.
All right, let's do it. Let's land it. 50 past the hour. Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Oh, yeah.
The Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're getting giddy. We're getting punchy. Hey, Chris, you ought to make some plans for later this afternoon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm planning on calling you.
Oh,
yeah. So maybe maybe I'll call you this afternoon and be like, oh, yeah, I can't talk right now because...
the roof guy's here.
Something's wrong with my PlayStation.
Yeah, something's about to happen. I remember. I got to hang up the phone. What is that? We'll be broadcasting live this Friday from Restaurant Florent on Gansfort Street and meet the Meatpacking District here in New York City. It's a nice restaurant. Steve Earle is going to be coming down to play some music, so why don't you come on down and have breakfast with us over there. We'll be giving away coffee, tons of free stuff. Not tons, few free things. I mean, tons,
few things.
That's ridiculous.
Nobody
tons.
Can lug tons.
No, it's ridiculous. I mean, how many? We only have a couple interns. Well, actually,
they could carry everything. carried his building down there.
Anthony is Luca is huge.
Luca, there you go. My name is Luca.
No, I was thinking about Luca Brasi. This guy's big, man. But big and smart, which is good.
Yeah.
On the phone, interesting call. He's calling from, he's up in Saratoga. Why don't you put Commander Cody through? How are you, Commander? Commander Cody, dude, you're not going to believe this. My producer comes in, he says, hey, does anyone know who Commander Cody is? I'm like, are you kidding? Hot Rod Lincoln. That was you, right?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, you know, the reason I called in is because I heard the connection. You guys are going to be on Gansevoort Street.
Yes.
On Friday. Well, I am in Gansevoort.
Oh!
Which is a suburb of Saratoga Springs.
Okay. Oh. So you guys...
I just wanted to come in. I've got a really black vision that I came upon after listening to Jerry Springer's show last week.
Black vision? So do I.
Vision. I mean, a really dark, really, really, really nasty thing. And what happened was, he was talking to somebody that said, listen, you got to go to the World Trade Center number 7 website. I haven't said anything political in 30 years. 30 years ago, the government thought that I was a communist.
For Hot Rod Lincoln?
I did a couple of things, like, say, help the Indians take over Alcatraz. I headlined the International Communist Party Festival. And I was invited to Cuba to play a concert. No, I didn't do that because I am, in fact, non-political. But anyway, I went to this website.
Yeah.
And the World Trade Center number 7. You know about this?
Well, I've heard about it.
You gotta go to that website because it's that third building went down exactly the same way the other two did. Just
right.
Like
they think it.
Yeah. Controlled demolition.
Like it was blown up from the inside.
Exactamundo.
Do you tour anymore, man? Do you do Hot Rod Lincoln anymore?
I do Hot Rod Lincoln 100 days a year. We're playing right underneath a giant government center here in Albany on Friday, and we're just going over the security checks that I got to do just to get my equipment into this place.
I think you're not. Are they still suspicious of you, Commander Cody?
Oh well, yeah.
Man, really?
they don't really bug me like they used to, but in the 70s they used to bug me all the time.
Did you ever know Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show?
I know all those guys. I used to open shows for the Dead. I used to open shows for the Airplane. I did lots of shows with Dr. Hook. I know all those guys.
Wow, man. So that's great. How many of the members of the original band are still around?
Oh, well, they're all still around. They're not playing with me right now. A couple of them are not around anymore.
Yeah.
A couple of them, and most everybody used that as a platform to launch their own careers.
Yeah. Any new stuff? You got any new songs?
We got all kinds of new things going on.
Yeah.
And this, I wanted to make one other point about this to make the connection, because the darkness of this vision is that there's somebody in the United States that's helping out these guys, and they won't find Bin Laden because he's in cahoots with everybody, and they can't find him because he'll blow it.
Yeah, we've talked about that. You know, Glenn Campbell believes in extraterrestrials.
A week after 9/11, I was touring down south. They didn't cancel any gigs down there, and I was in Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, and Georgia.
Yeah.
And in each one of those things, there were a bunch of people laughing and yucking it up about all the Jews, blacks, northern fags, and foreigners that got killed in that explosion. And they were having a great time about that.
This was at one of your... These were at concerts?
These are at concerts, me observing the people interacting with each other.
So you're on stage.
And yucking it up about all those guys. And I want to guarantee you one thing. The terrorists are not going to blow up anything in Texas ever.
Are you sure they weren't just having a good time because you're playing Hot Rod Lincoln?
That was way before I started playing Hot Rod Lincoln.
Okay, all right.
Before we even started playing it, I'm just
hanging out.
The audience, you know, just kind of look as undercover as I possibly could and just listen to see what everybody has, because I'm from New York and I'm shook up and we're down there. No gates were canceled. I need the dough. We're cruising around in there yucking it up.
All right, man. Well, Commander Cody, thanks for calling in. It was interesting to talk to you. Maybe we'll talk again. Take care of yourself.
Keep up the good work, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Commander Cody from Commander Cody and the Lost Planet Airmen. He's found. He's no longer lost. He's in upstate New York, and he's calling into our show.
I wonder if he's listening on the Internet on
FM. Sorry, man. Sorry. Yeah. I was just singing Hot Rod Lincoln. And I remember it when I was in like seventh grade, man. Hot Rod Lincoln. You don't remember it?
Not when I was in the seventh grade. No, I was a little older.
But that was Commander Cody, and he knows Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show.
I know.
I don't think he was listening to me when I said Glenn Campbell believes in extraterrestrials, but Glenn Campbell, also an amazing guitar player, believes in extraterrestrials. And Commander Cody, I don't want to condescend too much. He just wanted to draw our attention to a site talking about the World Trade Center conspiracy. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. A study by the U.S. Army says that the Army is stretched too thin by fighting simultaneous wars. The Army is so desperate for troops that the Boy Scouts have changed the rules. In order to graduate from the Boy Scout to an Eagle Scout, now you have to do one tour of duty. A spokesman for the Army said he will deny there is a manpower problem as soon as he gets the time. The CIA is investing in new technology, instantly recognizing terrorists in the crowd. The old way of spotting terrorists in a crowd was look for the guy who was blowing himself up.
Ooh.
All right. An editor for the Weekly Reader's children's publication was caught trying to solicit sex from a 14-year-old boy on the Internet. We should have suspected something when the Weekly Reader started running personal ads. Personal ads. If convicted, the guy could face 46 years in prison. That's one clown face more than three and less than seven. Phrase of the day, just put this into conversation. The Army is low on troops. The Army is not making its quotas. The Army is stretched too thin. Do you need a bomb to go off under your ass to see what's coming, man? Wake up, sheeple. Draft cards are just a signature away. Get out the Bic lighters and maps of Montreal. It's apocalypse again.
Oh. Hey, Matt, we're going to have some people up in here tomorrow.
Yes, sir, we are.
Terrorism expert Peter Bergen.
Oh, yeah, he's good.
Yeah,
I like
him.
He's
very, very good. Also, author James Fry and author Norman Solomon will discuss his new book, War Made Easy. It's all tomorrow here on Air America Radio. Have a good one, man.
You too, Riley.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.